It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Bill Hemmer. This is Hemmer Time. Kyle Condick, welcome. Managing editor, Larry Sabato's crystal ball. So you know everything in Virginia, don't you?
I don't know if I know everything, but I try to keep up with it.
Well, through the University of Virginia Center for Politics, you and Sabato have to stay on top of this stuff. And so you guys are like the mastermind. So I have one fundamental question for you. What is happening in Virginia?
I mean, look, I think it's a close competitive gubernatorial race, which I think you could sort of expect, at least from history, in that, the Virginia governor's race is one of the first big state level races anywhere after a presidential election year. You know, there aren't that many other big races in the odd numbered year after presidential. And the Virginia governor's race pretty often ends up breaking in favor of the party that does not hold the White House. If you go back to the 1970s, only one time has a presidential party candidate won the governor's race. That actually was Terry McAuliffe, the Democratic nominee this time, and McAuliffe won in 2013. It's also always an open seat race because Virginia is the only state where a governor cannot run for re-election. Now you can come back and run again, which is what McAuliffe is doing now. But that's just sort of historical factor, helps Glenn Youngkin, the Republican candidate. Also the fact that, Joe Biden and the Democrats aren't as strong as they were maybe a few months ago. And I think that has a bearing on the race too, that, Republican enthusiasm, I think is up, that shows up in polls. But also another thing that shows up in polls is that Virginia's become definitely a more Democratic state, than the nation is as a whole, certainly. And that's a factor that could end up helping McAuliffe in the end.
You got some funky rules in that state.
Absolutely. It's one of the, I think there are maybe like 4 or 5 states that have, governorships in odd numbered years. So New Jersey's also this year. You've got Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi in coming up 2 years from now.
But it
ensures that Virginia is always sort of in the political spotlight, because either you have a federal election every even numbered year, or you have statewide races in the state house of delegates this year. 2 years from now, it's going to be the state senate. So there's always something going on politically in Virginia.
Yeah. You guys have put handcuffs on term limits. If you can only hold office for 4 years, then move on. But you can come back, which is what McAuliffe is trying to do.
Yeah, and it's only happened one time before, and that was Mills Godwin, who was basically the last conservative Democrat elected in 1965. And then he came back in 1973 as the Republican nominee, as the state sort of realigned. Virginia, like so many other southern states, had this sort of conservative Democratic tradition and then kind of evolved into a traditional two-party state. Virginia was pretty Republican state for a long time, but now it's sort of transitioned to being more of a Democratic state.
Yeah, so that's the only time it's happened, huh?
I believe so, at least certainly in modern history. And so McAuliffe's trying to be the second, repeat governor again, even though he's not technically the incumbent in this election. He might as well be, given that he was just the governor from 2014 to 2018.
Yeah. When you, in a broad sense, when you scan the state, how do you break it down or analyze it?
I think you can sort of look at it politically now as there's this area, I guess you could sort of broadly group the three big urban areas together as what some people call the urban crescent. So you've got Northern Virginia, which is a big source of votes, a particularly big source of Democratic votes. You've got the greater Richmond area, which there's been some Democratic trend in that area, too. And then you've got Hampton Roads, which is, Virginia Beach and Norfolk and some of those places there. And that's traditionally a swing area. Virginia Beach is usually kind of a Republican leaning swing city. It's a place that voted for Donald Trump in 2016 and then voted for Joe Biden in 2020. So you've got those three areas, and together they cast 2/3 or more of the statewide vote. And then you've got kind of the rest of the state, which is definitely more Republican, kind of overwhelmingly Republican, you know, outside of some areas. I mean, Charlottesville, where the University of Virginia is a very Democratic place. There are other kind of college towns, city of Roanoke, et cetera. But, you know, Democrats used to compete in Western Virginia. And in fact, when Mark Warner first won the governorship way back in 2001, he ran some famous ads with NASCAR and was sort of trying to appeal to kind of culturally conservative Democratic voters in that part of the state. And Warner actually, you know, historically had done pretty well in Western Virginia. But just like every other Democrat, his support has receded in that part of the state, but it's grown in, you know, Northern Virginia and some of the bigger, you know, suburban, exurban areas. And so for Democrats in Virginia, it's basically a good trade-off because the Republican growth in Western Virginia is more than trumped by the Democratic growth in the places that basically just have more people.
Mm-hmm. I remember the night when Obama won in 2008, and a Democrat had not won in Virginia, I think, since 1964.
Right.
If memory serves, that was really a tremor that time in that election, which I think portended for a good night for Obama early on. My simple analysis is this: you know, with the deep blue growth of Northern Virginia across the river from Washington, D.C., and the deep red growth in the rest of the state, it's how many votes does McAuliffe run up in Northern Virginia versus how many votes does Youngkin get in Southern and Southwestern Virginia?
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's a totally reasonable way of looking at it. And look, I mean, you know, there are, you know, we used to think of, I think if you were like from the perspective of 2008, you know, that breakthrough election for Democrats, as you mentioned, you know, you would have looked at some of the bigger counties in Northern Virginia as being like swing counties, like Loudoun County, for instance, Prince William, which are kind of like suburban, exurban DC counties, and RICO is another one in the Richmond area. And, you know, over the past dozen years or so, those counties have sort of transitioned into being more like Democratic counties. You know, Democrats in good years will win, you know, by 20 plus points in those places. You know, can Youngkin cut that into the teens? You know, can he even cut it to single digits? You know, that's maybe what a victory would look like, because you got to, for Youngkin, he's got to, you know, tamp down the Democratic support to some level in Northern Virginia, and then kind of run up the score in much of the rest of the state. You know, I mentioned Virginia Beach earlier. Youngkin spent a little bit of his youth, I think he went to high school in Virginia Beach. You know, that's a place that a Republican has to win, and it's one of the larger sources of votes of any individual, mm-hmm. you know, city or county in the state. So that's really a place that I'll definitely be watching on election
night. You mentioned Enrico. That's like my favorite county in Virginia, because it doesn't look like that when you pronounce it right. I mean, that's in the Richmond area.
It kind of wraps around the city of Richmond. Again, yeah. It's another, you know, just like a lot of other places across the country, you know, it's a suburban, exurban county that, you know, used to be really Republican and has since become more Democratic.
Yeah. Who was Enrico, by the way? Do you know?
Pop quiz. You got me on that one. I do not know.
It begins with an H, by the way, not an E. You mentioned the Biden headwinds. Tell me about that. There might be a visit. McAuliffe said this week on MSNBC that it was coming, would not give a date. That's understandable. But is Biden a drag that could be more prominent in Northern Virginia than elsewhere in the state, given exposure to Washington, D.C., which ultimately could help Youngkin? How do you analyze that factor?
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, Biden's, you know, approval rating is net negative across the country. You know, it's probably either a little bit negative or maybe, you know, about break even in Virginia. But Fox News put out their own poll, you know, within the last day that had Biden's approval slightly positive in Virginia, which seems kind of reasonable to me. But, you know, given that Virginia is more Democratic than the nation now. But, you know, you do wonder if there is a, you know, there's always kind of an enthusiasm problem for the presidential party in these off-year elections, be it a Virginia gubernatorial race or potentially for the midterm next year. And if you sort of pair that with maybe dissatisfaction with how things are going in Washington, you know, there's been just a number of kind of negative developments for Biden, the Afghanistan withdrawal, which was one of the kind of the catalyzing event that I think turned his approval negative. But, you know, COVID hasn't gone away. You've got, you know, inflation and the supply chain problems, which maybe nibble on the margins of his approval rating. And, you know, Democrats are, again, they're challenged in kind of drumming up enthusiasm. And if, you know, Biden doesn't look that great. And also, you know, you've got the Democrats trying to figure out this big social spending package and whether they can pass this bipartisan infrastructure bill. You know, Washington, controlled by Democrats, maybe looks a little ineffective right now. And again, I do wonder if that causes some sort of problem for Democrats. So, you know, look, McAuliffe, I'm sure, felt a lot better about his standing in the race, you know, when Biden's approval nationally was like 55%, as opposed to now when it's on average is really close to 45%.
You know, my co-anchor, Dana Perino, and I, we like the data. We like the nitty gritty of races like this. And we like to dive deep into the numbers. I said, I'm going to talk to Kyle on Friday. And I said, you got a question for him? And she said, ask him what he pays attention to that no one else does. You got a good answer?
Well, you know, I have been looking at the early vote stuff, which I think most people probably don't look at. And also, you know, you can also look at it and decide that it probably doesn't tell you all that much. And that's sort of where I'm at with the early vote stuff. So, you know, a lot of states like Florida, for instance, you know, Florida has a long tradition of people voting by mail or voting early in person. And so, you know, we know in Florida that, you know, the lion's share of the electorate votes before election day. And that's been true for years there. Now, you know, maybe that changes a little bit, party perceptions of whether you should vote in advance or not. You know, that's sort of a thing. But so we know that about Florida. Virginia, on the other hand, is a state where prior to 2020, there was hardly any earlier mail-in voting at all. Usually less than 10% of the whole electorate voted that way. And you know, you needed an excuse to vote early or to vote absentee by mail, et cetera. So the legislature changed those rules in 2020, you know, right before the pandemic, which actually ended up being kind of a prescient in that, you know, a lot of people wanted to take advantage of early mail-in voting because of where the pandemic was last year. And so about 60% of all the votes were cast early, either in person or by mail. This time, even if you sort of take into account that a gubernatorial election is going to have less turnout than a presidential year election, the pace of the early vote, even if you take that into account, is slower this time. It's picking up a little bit, but if you're concerned about the Democratic position, that might be something to watch, because we know, again, from across the country that, you know, Republicans are likely to dominate on election day. Now, it may also be, though, that people in Virginia just aren't really used to voting early, and they mm-hmm. only did it in 2020, and they're going to come back to voting on election day this year. But that's something to sort of monitor. But, you know, it's something I've like been looking at, but I don't know if we could draw that many conclusions from it, because, again, Virginia is not a state with a long track record of a lot of people voting in advance prior to 2020.
Early voting started back on the 18th of September. I think it ends on the 24th of October. So that's what, 5 or 6 weeks. But you're saying that you can't read much into the early voting.
Yeah, I really can't, because, again, you know, it's not like we, you know, in 2017, for instance, I think only 7% of the vote was cast earlier in person. You know, in the presidential election in Virginia, it was 60. That's a huge difference. Yeah. You know, what is the sort of what does it settle at, you know, over the next several years? Like, how are Virginians voting? You know, do a lot of them go back to voting in person on election day, or do people, you know, take more advantage of the early voting options? We have a track record like that in other states to compare to. We don't in Virginia, so it's not, I just don't know what to make of it.
Yeah. We've had Youngkin on the air a couple of times. McAuliffe has had an open invitation. He has not yet taken us up on that. Hope that changes. But I was watching an interview with him on Thursday. MSNBC, Andrea Mitchell, I think you may have seen that as well, Kyle. But he was, he went after Youngkin about these election conspiracy theories that Youngkin was talking about the other night. I did not follow that or catch that particular appearance by Youngkin, but that's what McAuliffe brought up. He says he's a Trump wannabe. So here is a question for you. Do we know if Democrats run well when they run against Donald Trump, even though Trump is not on the ballot?
I don't think we do know that, although I guess you could say that in California, much more Democratic state than Virginia is, you know, Gavin Newsom was facing a recall. He ended up running ahead of his the polls in that race, one it looks like by about a little under 25 points. And he was able to kind of nationalize that race against his, you know, the guy who would have replaced him as governor if he would have been recalled, Larry Elder, who is a pretty conservative, you know, person with the talk radio host. And I think Newsom was able to sort of basically remind people of Trump through Elder. I think McAuliffe's trying to do the same thing with Youngkin, but Youngkin, I think, isn't as easily tied to Trump, in part because, you know, he's not a boisterous radio talk show person. You know, I think Youngkin is plenty conservative, just like I think McAuliffe is plenty liberal, but he doesn't necessarily convey these sort of Trumpian vibes. I think Youngkin is more like a, he has kind of like more of like a Romney, Paul Ryan kind of, you know, attitude, I guess, or the sort of image. And so, you know, ultimately, any opportunity that McAuliffe gets to tie Youngkin to Trump, he's going to take. And there was a rally that Youngkin was not at in Virginia a couple days ago that Steve Bannon, you know, the person who's, you know, has been close to president, the former President Trump.
Worked in the White House in the early days. Yes. Continue.
Yeah. So McAuliffe has tried to make hay of that. And, you know, I think McAuliffe is the one essentially trying to nationalize this race. He wants to make it about national issues. Wants to remind people about, you know, that Trump has endorsed Youngkin, et cetera. Whereas Youngkin and McAuliffe is bringing in a lot of big figures. You mentioned that Biden is probably going to come campaign for McAuliffe. Former President Obama is coming. Jill Biden is coming. Stacey Abrams, from the former gubernatorial nominee from Georgia, who's a big national presence on the Democratic side. She's going to campaign for McAuliffe.
That's a lot.
Whereas Youngkin really, Youngkin is really not bringing in, you know, big kind of, I'd say, I guess, celebrity or prominent Republicans. He is, and I think that shows that he wants to sort of be his own person. He doesn't want to nationalize the race because I think he realizes that he needs some crossover support. And if he's, you know, if he's out campaigning with Donald Trump or other kind of big name Republicans, that kind of plays right into McAuliffe's strategy of nationalization.
Kyle Condit, great stuff. Stand by. More in a moment here on Hammer Time.
The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day. Featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
Back with Kyle Condit, managing editor Larry Sabato's crystal ball from the University of Virginia Center for Politics. Kyle, thank you so much for your time. Just a few more questions as we try and run down what the state of play is in Virginia. On the issues, here at Fox, we've covered the education issue in depth. And I don't know how you figure that into the big vote, or is that something we wait to determine based on the results after they come in?
I'd say it's more the latter, which I guess is kind of a cop-out answer. I will say, and I just go
well,
back
well,
to
you are the guest, so
the Fox News poll that you all put out, which is a poll that I really respect, a good track record over the years. But that poll, I think, indicated that, you know, I think that Califf made this comment at the second debate in which he said, you know, I don't think parents should be telling teachers what to teach. Essentially, I'm paraphrasing, but and the Youngkin campaign has really run with that in their advertising, and they've been using that as something I think that they think they could hurt McAuliffe with. And I think what that poll indicated, as I read it, is that comment was, you know, it's not something that a majority of Virginians agree with, and that on education is an issue that Youngkin and McAuliffe are pretty close to in terms of who voters would trust on that issue. You know, typically Democrats have more of an edge. And yet among parents, McAuliffe was leading by 10. And I don't know if you could say that comment has necessarily like moved the race in favor of Youngkin. So it's not obvious to me that education as an issue is really popping in this race. Now, if you see some of the suburban exurban places like Loudoun County has been sort of a flashpoint for school board battles and education stuff this calendar year. You know, if you see Youngkin run, you know, way ahead of what, say, Donald Trump did in Loudoun, that might be an indication that the education issue actually worked for him there. But it's not obvious to me from the polling yet that it's been a big factor in the race.
Oh, very interesting answer there. We'll put that on the back burner and see how it comes out. I was looking at history for the governor's races. I think generally the association that people make the Virginia politics today is that it's a blue state. Now, we had a Democratic analyst on this week, Mo Alethi. I'm sure you're familiar with him from Georgetown.
Sure.
He disagreed with that. He kicked it to the curb. He said, Virginia's purple. And maybe he's right, but if you look at the history of the past dozen years, the governor races have been closer than one would expect. In 2009, the Republicans won. GOP won that. In 2013, pretty close race, but you had a third-party candidate that likely took votes away from the Republican. Democrats win. But in 2017, Democrats rolled. Northam, Ralph Northam, blew out his Republican opponent. Do we think that is still the state of play for Virginia politics, or do we think it is still more of a purple middle-of-the-road state? Your view on that is what?
I think Trump was just not a very good fit for Virginia, and he kind of hypercharged the Democrats in 16, 17, 18, 19, and 20, because, you know, Virginia, there's some sort of state or federal level election going on basically every year. But Trump, you know, he's not in the White House anymore. He's not on the ballot, obviously. And I do think that there might be sort of that tide will probably recede to some level. Now, the good thing for McAuliffe is that, you know, Ralph Northam won in 2017 by 9, Biden won by 10 in 2020. You know, McAuliffe can afford some reversion from Democrats and still win this race. It's just a question of how much is there. You know, I don't think that Virginia is like a bellwether state for the country anymore, or like is a purely purple state. I think it's trending more toward being a blue state, but I think it is still competitive enough that, you know, Glenn Youngkin can win this race if enough things break for him.
Mm-hmm. You're great, Kyle. Thank you so much for your time. I just have one last question for you. I mentioned the McAuliffe interview this week, and he basically had, without being prompted, a message for Washington, D.C. I wrote down the quote. He said, they need to get a deal done. That's a clear reference to infrastructure or build back better or both, suggesting that he is well aware that a Democratic majority stuck in the mud of D.C. politics has not been good for him or will not be good for him. How do you view that?
Look, I think McAuliffe wants something positive he can point to, you know, from across the Potomac in the final days of this race, you know, because he, you know, he wants to, you know, say that, you know, the Democrats are getting things done. And, you know, maybe if Democrats are able to pass something before the election, that gives a little bit of shot in the arm to Biden, which, you know, if you believe that the president's approval is important essentially everywhere, which I basically do, you know, if Biden's approval goes up a little bit, that's sort of the rising tide that lifts all boats. And, you know, McAuliffe feels the most urgency here because so many other Democrats are not, you know, they're not on the ballot until a year from now. So they can think, oh, well, you know, we can wait and get this thing done in November, December, or whatnot. But you know, here's the thing. If McAuliffe loses, they're going to be there are probably going to be some, particularly the moderates in swing districts in Washington, who are going to be worried about, you know, their own fate next year. And maybe that has some sort of impact on Democrats' ability to get what they want. Yeah. Through Congress. So you know, certainly, you know, again, McAuliffe wants to be able to point to something positive. And there hasn't been a lot of that from Washington over the last couple of months, which might be contributing, probably is contributing to why this is a, seems like a very close competitive race.
Yeah, I've got a piece. By the way, we're talking on Friday afternoon, October 15th. So whenever our listeners get to this, things could change because I'm holding in my hands an article from the Washington Post 2 days ago. Karen Tumulty wrote it. And the headline is A Dangerous Sign for Democrats in Virginia and Beyond. The first line is, Democrats are sweating the Virginia governor's race, which is turning out to be tighter than expected. We will see in the end, Kyle, if that is the case. I really appreciate your time today.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Great stuff, Kyle. We will speak again. Kyle Condon.
Thanks, Bill.
Managing editor, Larry Sabato's Crystal Ball. We'll see if you have seen the future or not in that crystal ball. Thank you, Kyle. Have a great weekend. I'm Bill Hemmer. This is Hemmer Time.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.